average of 45 cents for a hot lunch, but in some areas the cost has risen to more than 70 cents. The bill must still be approved by both houses of Congress, and Representative Carl Perkins believes it will pass.
The people in this country, the school children, deserve that much consideration. And they deserve a nutritious meal. I believe the entire Congress will go along.
Congress has decided not to attempt to override President Ford's veto of the oral tariff delay bill, at least not for now. The House referred the bill to the Ways and Means Committee, and Chairman Al Alderman says it will be held in abeyance as long as Mr. Ford's voluntary suspension of additional oil tariff fees remains in effect. More CBS News after this.
Hello, I'm Helen Hayes. There's something very important happening in this country. High school students from 60 nations are living here for a year in the United States. They're learning about us, about our families, our schools, our communities. And we're learning from them. It happens through American Field Service, AFS, and the thousands of people who give their time to help others. Volunteers help find families to host students. They arrange activities in the community and help raise scholarship funds. AFS is an exciting and rewarding activity that deserves a place in your town or your city. To find out how you can help bring an international experience to your school and community, write AFS 313 East 43rd Street, New York, New York. That's AFS 313 East 43rd Street, New York, New York.
Federal Energy Administrator Frank Zarb told President Ford Tuesday he hopes a compromised national energy bill can be developed in the next few weeks. Zarb spent more than an hour briefing Mr. Ford concerning his struggles with a Democratic-controlled Congress on reaching agreement on an energy bill. The government of Kuwait says it will start negotiations Wednesday to take over 40% of the oil fields owned by the British Petroleum Company and the Gulf Oil Company. The government nationalized 60% of the fields last year. I'm Jim Kilpatrick. CBS News.
CBS for Seattle. This is KIXI. The weather outlook calls for increasing cloudiness with chance of showers tomorrow and tomorrow night. Cloudy with showers continuing on Thursday. The highs near 50, lows in the upper 30s. In downtown Seattle currently, it's 47 degrees. 45 at the airport. Taking a look at sports in the NBA this evening, the Seattle Supersonics in overtime defeated Houston 122-117. The New York Knicks down Phoenix 103-98. Cleveland beat New Orleans 123-114. It was Los Angeles 95, Detroit 94. Golden State down to Milwaukee 107-90. Boston beat Chicago 121-115. And Washington 99, Atlanta 87. The CBS Radio Mystery Theater is next on KIXI. The time now is 7 minutes past 10.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. I'd like to ask you something. What do you consider your most attractive feature? Your hair? Your eyes? Complexion? Your figure? Whatever, each of us is abundantly aware, though there are some who would deny it, of his or her most captivating attribute. And make the most of it, though there are some who deny that too. Be all this as it may. We're about to hear of a woman whose most beguiling characteristic was her smile. And because of it, the horrible thing that happened.
Yes, I am dying. But I tell you, Ernest, I tell you, you will never be rid of me. Even when I am in my coffin in the family vault, you will never be rid of me. Never, Ernest. Never.
I think, yes, she's gone. Berenice is dead.
No. No.
Ernest, Ernest, don't take on now, don't.
Her mouth, those lips bared, her teeth. She is staring at me with her teeth, Anthony. Anthony, in heaven's name, close her mouth. Close her mouth!
Our mystery drama, Berenice, was adapted from the Edgar Allan Poe classic, especially for the Mystery Theater by George Lowther, and stars Michael Tolan and Norman Rose. It is sponsored in part by Contact, the 12-hour cold capsule, and Uncle Ben's long grain and wild rice. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
You're on the open road, rolling free and feeling great about your new Buick Century. Because in published EPA mileage test results, a V6 Buick Century got the best highway mileage of any U.S. midsize car. 24 miles per gallon and 16 in the city. Your Century's comfortable, it's nimble, it's economical, and above all, it's a Buick.
Living free.
Last month, I noticed my oldest boy. He seemed so much older. I spent a lot of time away from home, but boy, that was a shock. He's growing up without me. I figured if I was going to have any influence in his life at all, I'd better start now. So I set aside one night a week, and each week I take a different child, and we go and do whatever they want. And you know, it's amazing what it's done for the kids and me.
Give your children everything. Give them your time. A thought from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons.
See if you can identify these sounds. Squeaky door. Lion growling. A motor scooter. Cow mooing. Spanish dancer. If you agreed with these guesses, you've been fooled, because each sound was made by a whale. That's right, a great big blubbery old whale just buzzing and clicking and grunting away deep down in the ocean. The National Audubon Society has joined a world effort to save these amazing animals from extinction. We need your help. To find out what you can do, write National Audubon Society, 950 3rd Avenue, New York, New York, 10022.
What we call a fixation, an idée fixe, is one of the most extraordinary and mystifying aspects of the human mind. For example, love. Young love, at least, is a fixation. For the lover cannot get the loved one out of his thoughts. He thinks of her night and day, or she of him. And there is, I need scarcely say, no more wondrous person in all the world. What cure can be found for a fixation? Well, when it comes to love, and I don't mean to sound cynical, I suppose marriage. But when it came to Ernest Montresor and his wife Berenice, well, that's our story.
Do not tell me, Anthony, what I must do or must not do.
Ernest, please.
You are my friend, you are my attorney. You have come here to Mangrove Manor to straighten out whatever legal matters attend Berenice's death, and that is all.
Ernest, I didn't mean to offend you.
I am not offended, I am irritated. You can sit there and say, Ernest, your wife is dying. Try not to hate her as you do. Let me tell you something, my good friend. Had you lived 1 month, 1 week, 1 day in this house with Berenice, that shrew, that spitfire, you too would know what hate is.
But I don't understand. I was at your wedding a little over a year ago, here at Mangrove, and you were deliriously in love with her.
Not her. Her smile.
What?
I know you'll find it hard to believe, but that is the truth. Oh, there were other qualities that attracted me. Her charm, her gentle manner, her warmth. But these vanished quickly once we were married. I soon learned that her charm was a veneer, her gentle manner a mask that concealed a vicious temper.
I am sorry.
I didn't want to hate her. For months, I put all feelings of hate from me. But asking myself how and why I still went on loving her.
That's when I realized was her smile.
I still fail to understand.
Look at Berenice closely and you will see that she's really very plain. Almost ugly. But one doesn't look closely at first. I didn't, surely. Because of her smile. Of what her smile was then. She had teeth so even, so white, so perfect, they are as matched pearls. As for her lips, nowhere will you find lips so beautifully modeled, so sensuously inviting, so absolutely enthralling.
I remember, yes.
But Anthony, soon after our marriage, her smile changed too. The lovely contour of her lips became an ugly sneer. She no longer smiled. She bared her teeth like a vicious animal.
But there must have been a reason, something that impelled her to...
I'll give you a reason if you must have it. Constance.
Berenice's younger sister?
Yes. You know she came to live here at Mangrove when her husband died.
I settled the estate, yes. Not, I'm afraid, that there was much to settle. He left her penniless.
Precisely why she lived here. Berenice began to think...
Go no further, Ernest. I am well acquainted with what is termed the eternal triangle.
In this case, there was no triangle. Not then.
But there is now.
Constance is what Berenice pretended to be. Gentle, innocent, loving. Yes, I have fallen in love with her, and she with me. But you may believe me, as Berenice never has, when I tell you that our love is and has ever been platonic. Neither of us has betrayed Berenice in any way. Yes, come. Oh, Constance, my dear. We were just speaking of you. You remember Anthony Lamb?
With pleasure. You were such a help and comfort to me when my husband died, Mr. Lamb.
I did what I could.
You look upset, Constance.
Berenice wants to see you. And she's in one of her blackest moods, I'm afraid.
Is she ever in any other?
Try not to be harsh on her, Ernest. She's dying, you know.
I shall try. If you'll excuse us, Anthony.
Perhaps I should come along. I have to discuss certain legal matters with Berenice, and it will be best if she knows I'm here.
Come, then. But I warn you, my friend, you'll regret every moment spent with her.
It's you.
You wanted to see me, Berenice.
You, not this army you've brought with you. Get out of here, Constance.
Of course.
And who are you? I've seen you somewhere. I remember you.
I'm Anthony Lamb, Berenice. I don't blame you for not recognizing me. It's been over a year.
Oh, yes. Yes, I remember you now. Ernest's friend, the pettifogging lawyer, the shyster. Why are you here?
Well, now I...
Yes?
Ernest asked me to come because... Well, Berenice, I'm told you're quite ill, and at such times it's... Well, it's best to
make sure that all will be legally neat and tidy when I'm cold in my coffin.
Well, you put it much...
The only way it can be put. I'm dying, and I know I'm dying, and so do you. If you don't, you must be blind. And if you want proof of it, look. Once my smile was the most ravishing smile on earth. Look at it now. Yes, the color leaves your face, Mr. Lawyer. You all but shrink away because it's no longer the beautiful smile of the living Berenice, but the ghastly grin of the Berenice who will soon be cold in death.
Stop it. Stop smiling.
Dear husband, what is it? You used to tell me my smile captivated you, enslaved you. Can it be that it now repels you? Oh, don't turn away.
I won't look at you, not when you smile.
Don't look then for all the good it'll do you. You'll remember. Soon I shall be dead. But my smile will never die. It will live on in your brain, Ernest. Wherever you go, whatever you do, it will be with you.
No.
This smile, this ghoulish grimace, because it was what you married, what you loved, and then came to hate, and And you will hate it till the day you die, Ernest. For till that day, awake or asleep, it will haunt you.
Would you care for more of the shrimp, Mr. Lamb?
Well, thank you, no, Constance. Oh, and do call me Anthony, won't you? It'll make me feel so much younger.
If you wish. Ernest, won't you eat? You haven't touched a morsel.
Not hungry.
But you must keep up your strength. If you're not careful, you'll be having nightmares again.
Nightmares, Ernest?
The most horrible you can imagine. Berenice has all but ruined my health. Ruined it.
Hush now, we mustn't talk that way.
What other way is there?
No more wine, Ernest.
Another glass can do no harm.
No more, dear. For my sake.
For your sake, anything. Anything except to lie about my true feelings. You, Constance, you have lived in this house for nearly a year. You know the hell she has made of my life. You know that I could not mourn her passing. And what is more, you know that I love only you.
Ernest, it is not the proper time.
I know, but I...
Now, you are overwrought. It is not you speaking, but your nerves. Listen to me.
Constance.
My sister lies upstairs dying. Whatever you think of her, in these last days of her life, though we cannot in truth love her, we can, in all dignity and honor, try at least not to hate her. You must try, Ernest. You must.
Yes. And with your help, I shall.
But you will not succeed.
Berenice.
How did you get here, out of bed?
I rang my bell, but no one came. I called, but you did not answer.
We didn't hear.
And so I found the strength, what strength remains, to come down and tell you I am about to die.
No.
When death is near, you know it. Full well you know it. I have little time left now. Perhaps only minutes. A glass of wine.
Of course.
He hurries to assist me, to comfort me, when in his heart he would kill me.
No, Berenice, I would not.
Liar.
Berenice,
you hate me. Say it, you hate me. Say it.
Here, the glass of wine you asked for.
That's your glass of wine. Sniveling, nightmare-ridden fool. I had hoped I'd at last found a man when I married you. You were like all the others.
Berenice, let me help you back to your
bed.
And
as for you, did you think I wasn't on to you and your little tricks? Did you think me blind, that I couldn't see what went on between you and my husband?
Nothing. Before heaven, I swear that...
Liar! I saw, I know... Little Constance, innocent, saintly little sister, sinking her claws deeper and deeper into the man who was mine.
Madam.
You address me.
Madam, you are ill, yet there is in you a kind of strength I have recognized before. In, I say to you, the worst kind of criminal.
Huh? Go on.
I don't know that I can. I have never understood what made these people what they were, but... This I know. There are angels on this earth and there are devils. And you, madam, I say it to you, even in your dying moments, you are a devil. I don't blame you for looking at me like that. I spoke on impulse. I'm ashamed.
Ashamed? You are the first man who has ever dared to...
Berenice.
Stay away. Stand back. Don't touch me. Only listen. You will be haunted by the magnet that drew you to me. The weapon with which I ruined your life and will destroy you. My smile, Ernest. My smile.
No.
Look at me. Sensuous lips bearing milk-white, perfectly matched teeth. Look.
Here,
let me.
She's falling across the table.
I think, yes,
She's gone. Berenice is dead.
No.
Ernest, don't.
Her mouth. She is staring at me with her teeth. Anthony, in heaven's name, close her mouth. Close her mouth!
I said at the outset, you'll recall, that because of Berenice's smile, a horrible thing happened. What has just happened in the dining room of Mangrove Manor is indeed horrible, but nowhere near as horrible as that which is about to take place. I will return shortly with Act Two.
This mystery is really thrilling me.
The suspense is really killing me.
Just sitting here by the radio
with Vigna Rosé Wine.
Uh-huh.
Vigna Rosé Wine.
Say, this Vigna Rosé is delicious.
It goes with so many dishes.
Or all alone by the radio. Vigna Rosé Wine.
Uh-huh.
Vigna Rosé Wine. Come let me pour you some more Vigna.
At the price it's a value, if you know what I mean.
Now let's go back to our mystery show.
But I have one question before I go. What's light and refreshing imported to?
Vigna Rosé Wine.
That's the answer, Vigna Rosé Wine.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
What a wine.
Imported by Uline, Hartford, Connecticut.
Who knows what troubles lurk in the hearts and minds of consumers? The man from the Better Business Bureau knows.
Oh, Irene, this new sofa is gone already, and...
Why, what's that inside the cushion, John? It's, oh my heavens, it's crumpled newspaper. How did we ever buy a sofa like this? What can we do?
I'll tell you what to do.
Who are you, sir?
I'm the man from your Better Business Bureau. When you shop for furniture, it's what's inside that counts. Fancy coverings can hide a variety of shoddy workmanship. Read the law label that must be stitched to the furniture. It will tell you the filler material used and buy from a reputable dealer.
Oh, thank you, sir. We'll know better next time.
Not at all, ma'am. Just another tip from your Better Business Bureau.
I think it was Sir Winston Churchill who said that when the human brain grabs hold of a thing, a worry, a concern of some sort, an anxiety, it grips that thing as in an iron fist and will not let it go. Clearly, then, this is what has happened to Ernest Montresor, who, even while she was alive, could not get his wife's sneering smile out of his head. And now that she has been placed in the family vault on the estate near Baton Rouge, Louisiana, well, listen.
Ernest. Ernest.
Yes, Anthony, what?
It's more than half an hour since everyone left. Constance and I are getting chilled to the bone here in the vault. Let's go back to the house.
Not till I'm sure the lid of Berenice's casket is nailed tight.
But you are sure.
It's madness, I know, Anthony. But I have the fear that somehow, in some way, she'll get out of her coffin and haunt me.
You're letting your imagination run away with you, Ernest. You're tired, overwrought. My sister is dead. She'll not get out of her coffin. Come now.
Ernest.
Yes. Let us return to the house.
I'll close and lock the gate.
No, I will. There. She's well nailed down in her coffin. Well locked in, too.
Yes. Now let's...
No, wait.
Good Lord, man, what now?
I must make sure the lock is strong. Sound and strong.
Now, Ernest, dear, that's enough.
Don't tell me what is enough. Don't...
Ernest.
Dearest, what is it? Why are you looking at me with such fear?
Never, Constance. Never, so long as you live, smile at me like that again. You looked like Berenice.
But, Ernest,
My nerves are shaken. I need a drink. Excuse me.
He's in trouble, Constance. We'd best catch up with him.
But, Anthony...
Nothing to worry about, really. You just upset him a little when you smile.
But that's the point.
What?
I didn't smile. Will you take another brandy, Anthony?
Thank you, no, Constance. As they say, one is as good as more.
I wish Ernest thought so.
Yes, he is drinking a bit too much, though he doesn't show it.
His nerves burn up the spirits quickly. I have never seen him in such a nervous condition, never so exhausted.
Let's hope he's having a good, deep, restful sleep.
Speaking of what is good for Ernest, I hope you'll be able to stay with us a while, Anthony.
I should like to, but I have pressing business in Baton Rouge.
A few days? It would be such a comfort to Ernest.
I'm sure, but the comfort he really needs is what you can give him. Constance, may I speak frankly?
Of course.
In ordinary circumstances, by which I mean had Ernest and Berenice still loved each other, I'd not suggest anything of this sort, but... Well, all things considered, Constance, I should like to see you marry Ernest as soon as possible.
Berenice not yet cold in her grave, and you?
I do, yes. Constance, you alone can give him the love and the warmth he so desperately needs.
I know, but... Oh, Anthony, whatever she was, Berenice was my sister. How can I, in all conscience, marry her husband within so short a time? It would be an act of... indecency.
Oh, no, an act of charity and of love. My dear, no immediate decision is needed. Think about it and should...
No!
What? What in the name of heaven?
It's Ernest!
No!
Come, quick!
No!
Ernest, merciful Lord, what is it?
Oh, it's you. You, good friend, and Constance... Then it was a dream.
What was, my dearest?
I dreamed that I was awake, that I'd awakened from a sound sleep. It was all so real. I heard the storm outside and saw lightning brighten the room and thought, oh, good, I did manage to sleep and get some rest, and now I've awakened and...
Yes, and?
And then I saw it, hanging in the darkness of the room... burning bright in the black pitch of night, saw it.
Gently, my darling, gently now. Saw what?
Her smile. Berenice's smile, her disembodied smile, nothing else. It hung suspended in the dark before my eyes, the lips drawn back, the teeth shining in the blackness.
Oh, Ernest, Ernest.
And then her teeth... Those terrifying white, even teeth parted as she began to laugh. The most hideous laugh I have heard in all my life. Her mouth, her bodiless mouth, as it laughed, it started coming closer to me. Closer, closer. And I screamed, I screamed.
Anthony, what's to be done?
We must fetch the doctor, and at once.
Ernest, stop for a bit. Oh, let's rest.
Of course, my dear, of course. Here, let me help you down.
Oh, thank you, Ernest. There's a log over there. Shall we sit?
I would rather stand and hold you.
Oh, you are feeling better. Come, let's sit down.
No, wait.
Ernest?
Please, listen, Constance. Anthony returns to Baton Rouge tomorrow. I had a talk with him this morning. He knows I'm devoted to you and you to me. He urged, not that I needed urging, that I ask you to marry me.
Ernest,
do say yes, Constance. I beg you. Say you'll marry me.
That's exactly what I was going to say once you gave me the chance.
You will? You'll marry me?
Oh, I will. Oh, I will.
Constance... Oh, Constance. Let's hurry back and tell Anthony.
Yes, that dear good friend of yours will be relieved to know, I'm sure.
Here, I'll give you a hand up.
Oh, Ernest, my horse.
Oh,
Ernest, he's running away with me. Ernest!
Anthony. I must go up.
Patience, good friend. The doctor should be down any moment.
But he's been with her for more than an hour. I knew she was seriously injured. I knew it the instant I picked her up.
The way you described it, it was a bad fall.
The horse, running away, for what reason God alone knows, tried to leap a high fence, failed to make it, and came down rolling on Constance as she lay beneath him.
Oh, terrible, terrible. But no sense anticipating the worst. Constance may not be seriously hurt at all.
Constance is dying.
What?
She is dying.
Oh, come now, Ernest. You carry even your nerves too far.
There's something I didn't tell you. When I got to Constance, she was unconscious. I knelt beside her, got my arms under her, raised her, and stood up. I began to carry her to the house. A long distance. I'm not very strong. I tire easily. And so after a short time, I stopped for breath and looked at her. Looked into her face, Anthony.
Yes?
Her eyes were open, and she was smiling. The lips pulled back, the teeth showing. For an instant, she looked like Berenice. For that instant, she was Berenice. Doctor? Doctor, is she...
Don't bother him now, Ernest.
But I can bear no more of this waiting, this interminable waiting. Look at her. So deathly white, scarcely breathing, if at all.
Ernest?
She called my name. Oh, Constance. Oh, my own dear Constance.
Hush now. When I am gone...
No, you must not go. You cannot leave me. You cannot.
When I am gone, I say, no longer with you. Remember that it will be only on this earth I am not with you. In spirit, I shall be beside you always.
You are not going to die. You will be at my side, alive and beautiful, and my own dear adored wife.
No, that is not to be. Berenice has seen to that.
Berenice?
She was there. Just before my horse leaped the fence, I did not fancy it. She was there. She stood on the other side of the fence, smiling.
Oh, God in heaven.
And I knew, in the second that I saw her, the second before the horse crashed, I knew that she is a tormented soul, a soul that cannot rest until she is forgiven the sins she committed on earth, the sins she committed against you.
There is no forgiveness for what she did.
There is. It is in your heart, my darling, if you will only search for it and find it.
You are asking me to forgive her?
Yes.
Never. I could never.
You must. You must. For my sake. Will you try? That is all I ask before I leave you, my dearest. Will you try?
I will try.
And I, in another world, will love you for it more than I have ever loved you in this. Kiss me.
Oh, no. No, not if by saying that you tell me the time is near. Not if you tell
Quickly.
Me that. Yes. Oh, yes. Constance?
I'm sorry, Ernest. She's gone.
Oh, no!
Leave him to me, Doctor. You have other matters to handle. Come, Ernest. Sit down. Here in this chair. Sit, and I'll pour you a brandy.
Dead. Dead. Dead.
I know how you feel. But you mustn't go to pieces. Think of what she said, that she will be with you, at your side always.
What good is that if I cannot see her, touch her? What is he doing, the doctor?
What must be done? Closing her eyes, straightening her limbs, placing her hands in repose.
When he is finished, I shall sit with her, Anthony.
Of course.
And not leave her side till we take her to the vault. What's that?
What?
Listen. Someone laughing.
No one is laughing, Ernest.
Berenice. It is Berenice.
Ernest.
She is laughing from the vault. From the vault. You doubt me? Here. I throw wide the window. You hear? You hear?
I hear nothing.
Laughing in triumph. Vicious triumph, because once again she shattered my heart. Laugh, damn you, laugh! But I shall have done with you yet! I shall! Oh!
Doctor, quickly. He's fainted dead away.
So, in fevered imagination, in the sickened mental state brought on by unbearable grief, Ernest fancies he hears the hideous laughter of Berenice pursuing him, haunting him, driving him mad in death as she did in life. Or is it fancy? We'll know more about that when I return for Act 3.
Hi, I'm Burl Ives. You know, nothing perks up a meal like an exciting side dish. And I'd like to tell you about one your family and your guests are sure to love and keep on loving. It's Uncle Ben's long grain and wild rice. It's a mouth-watering mixture of Uncle Ben's converted bran rice, wild rice herbs, and seasonings. It's the kind of side dish that can make an ordinary meal a great meal and can keep a great meal from becoming ordinary. In fact, Uncle Ben's long grain and wild rice is so good, they tell me that most everyone who tries it comes back for more. That's because there are no compromises in quality. But that's the way Uncle Ben's does business. So, to make an ordinary meal a great meal, try Uncle Ben's long grain and wild rice. And to make sure you get the quality ingredients and good taste I've told you about, make sure it's Uncle Ben's.
In God We Trust. America Speaks. In the words of John F. Kennedy, the torch has been passed to a new generation. Born in this century, tempered by war, disciplined by a hard and bitter peace, proud of our ancient heritage, and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing of those human rights to which this nation has always been committed. With a good conscience, our only sure reward, with history the final judge of our deeds, let us go forth to lead the land we love, asking His blessing and His help, but knowing that here on earth, God's work must truly be our own. Presented by the Catholic Communications Foundation.
Scarcely has the breath of life fled the body of his beloved Constance than Ernest Montresor hears, or thinks he hears, the triumphant laughter of his dead wife, Berenice. Even though Ernest's friend and attorney, Anthony Lamb, did not hear the laughter, can we say the laughter echoed only in Ernest's imagination? If it comes to that, who can say that imagination is not reality? Be that as it may, let us now join Ernest and Anthony in that family vault.
It would seem that you're right, Anthony. Berenice must still be in her coffin. The lid is tightly nailed.
Of course.
But her laughter, so horribly clear.
Ernest, there was no laughter. You imagined it.
No, I heard it. She murdered Constance. She made the horse run away, fall, and kill her. Oh, Anthony, how can I rid myself of Berenice? Can I get rid of her? She was vile, vicious, clever. Clever.
What?
Clever. That's it, clever. We look at this coffin lid. We see it tightly nailed, and so we think she's still there.
Of course she is.
No, don't you see? She was clever enough to nail it shut again after she left it. Here, give me that pry iron.
You're not going to...
I must be sure. I must make absolutely certain she is still in her coffin. Otherwise, I dare not bring Constance here.
Oh, Ernest.
Can't you understand? Constance will lie here in the same vault with Berenice. If Berenice has the power to leave her coffin, what might she not do to the sister she hated as she hated me? You see? You see, you understand?
Yes, yes, sir.
So then... There.
Well,
Are you satisfied?
The body seems not to have moved. She is dead. No doubt about it, Berenice is dead.
No question, my friend. You can set your mind at rest.
Anthony, would you nail the lid back on? I want to go to Constance. Be with her until we bring her body here.
Ernest.
Yes, Anthony.
Ernest, it's 2 o'clock in the morning.
Not for her. Not for Constance. For Constance, there is no time now.
Ernest, please go to bed.
To bed? To dream? Once again to ride a nightmare?
I asked the doctor to give me a sedative for you. Now, if you'll take it...
It will do no good. More harm than good. I've taken them before, and I cannot leave Constance alone. Not to the awful loneliness of death.
I will stay with her.
No. I will. I must.
Ernest, hear me now. You will drive yourself mad if you go on like this. As your friend, I... What?
You heard it? I am not hearing things.
That sigh. It was Constance. And look, Ernest, look.
Color. Her cheeks. Color coming into her cheeks. Pulse, how do you feel for a pulse?
Now let me...
Yes? Yes?
There is no pulse. And yet, a faint warmth. Her wrist beneath my hand feels... Ernest, I tell you, there is warmth.
Alive. She is alive. Oh, God, God, in your merciful goodness, I thank you. Thank you.
And while you're thanking God, I'll fetch the doctor. Thank you, Doctor. I'm sorry to have put you through all this trouble. Thank you and good night. I'm sorry, Ernest.
Strange. Strange.
Very. There was color in her cheeks, warmth in her body.
Yet by the time the doctor arrived, the warmth had fled. The color vanished. She was once again a corpse. Anthony, what do you make of it?
I cannot say. I don't know. It's one of the most baffling things I've ever seen. But then Mangrove Manor seems alive with strange things.
Not so strange if you had lived a year with Berenice. If you had come to know her as the devil she was.
I begin to believe you. It's 4 in the morning, and I've been up. We both have been since early yesterday. There'll be much to do tomorrow, and both of us must get some rest.
No, not I. I will stay with Constance.
All right, Ernest, but be sensible. But take that large armchair in the corner and see if you can at least doze for a time.
Very well.
I'll go to my room for an hour or two of sleep.
All right. And Anthony, thank you for all you've done.
That's nothing. It's nothing.
Constance, my lovely Constance, I'll not leave you. I shall be there in that chair across the room. In this chair, Constance, still very near you, still watching you, waiting with you, through the long silence of death. Again? It was you? Again? You were sitting up. You are leaving the bed and coming toward me. You are not dead. You live. Oh, let me see your face. I cannot see it. The shadows and burial shroud hiding it from me. Take the burial shroud from your face. Let me see you. Constance, beloved, let me see you. Why do you laugh, my darling? Why? Is it happiness at finding yourself alive? Is it joy in knowing you're not dead after all? Here, let me take away the shroud. There. What? The lips, why? The teeth. Berenice. You are Berenice in Constance's body.
No. Ernest, no, it was not a nightmare.
I thought it was. I thought I'd had another horrible dream, that I'd gone to sleep in the chair and dreamed it all.
I might have thought so, too, if I'd only found you lying on the floor unconscious. But, my dear friend, I cannot describe my shock. Constance's body was sprawled across yours.
Constance's body?
But Berenice's spirit.
Don't think about it. Put it out of your head.
Impossible. It is etched in acid in my memory. I shall see it in every moment of my life, waking or sleeping. The lips curled back in that fearful sneer. The teeth, the terrifying teeth. If only I could blot them from my mind, but I can't.
Perhaps you can. Perhaps there is a way.
What?
If, as you think, Berenice is using Constance's body to haunt you, torment you.
She is.
Then all we need do is what we must do in any case. Bury Constance in the vault.
But of course, I sicken at the thought of placing my own dear lovely Constance in that cold, moldy chamber. And yet it must be done. And with her body locked within the vault, Berenice will be unable to haunt me.
But I must leave, Ernest. I have stayed as long as I can, far longer than I anticipated, and I do have other business, pressing business in Baton Rouge.
The thought of being alone in this huge and empty house, is there no way to persuade you?
I'm sorry, Ernest, but there isn't. I've done all I can for you. You know I have.
Of course I know it. There is no better friend in all the world than you, and I have no right to urge you to stay, none at all. But I am afraid. Afraid to be alone. Afraid. Of all things, it is a madness. Afraid of Berenice's teeth.
I suppose it is a form of madness. Berenice is dead and buried. Constance is dead and buried, and so Berenice cannot inhabit her corpse to torture you.
She'll find a way.
She will not.
She will. She lies in that vault out there, and in time her body will rot. But teeth do not. And so long as a tooth remains in her skull.
Ernest, it's 10 o'clock. I have a long, hard ride ahead of me tomorrow. I must get to bed, and so must you. We are both very much in need of rest.
Rest. So long as I live, there will never again be any rest for me. What? What? Berenice, that laugh. Did I hear it or only dream? Open the window and listen. Nothing. Nothing. A dream, another nightmare. To bed, Ernest, too. But what is this? I'm wet to the skin. My night clothes are drenched. My feet caked with mud. Oh, wait, it comes back to me now. The dream. The nightmare. Was it a dream or did I? Anthony! Anthony! Anthony!
I'm coming.
Good Lord, man. What is it now?
Come in. Come into my room.
Yes, but what is it? What's happened? Another of your awful nightmares? Well?
I don't know.
You don't know if you had a nightmare or you didn't?
If it was a dream, then that's what it was. But if it wasn't, if I really did the thing I thought I dreamed, then, Anthony, I am mad.
What do you mean?
I mean that if I really did it, I've done something so horrible it could only be the work of a madman.
Ernest, what did you do?
I dreamed. Oh, make it a dream. But look at me. My clothes soaked through. My feet muddied. I must have done it.
Done what? What?
I left my bed and went outside to the tool shed.
The tool shed?
And found what I was looking for. And then I went to the vault.
In this storm you went?
Yes, to the vault. I unbolted the gate and went in. And then I pried open Berenice's coffin.
Oh, no.
Yes, yes. There she lay, moldering in death. But the lips drawn back and the teeth, those white, even, perfect, gruesome teeth, exposed. I stared at them, stared in a horror of fascination. And then taking the instrument I had brought with me, I did what had to be done to save my sanity.
What? What did you do?
I dare not speak of it, put words to it. Nor can I bear to look.
Look?
to see, was it dream or reality?
Look at what?
When I had done it, I returned here to my room. I placed the instrument on the mantel. In my dream, I placed it there. And though it must be a dream, please, go to the mantel. See if the instrument is there.
Very well, Ernest. I see nothing here but a pair of pliers.
Oh!
This is the instrument you used in your dream?
No dream. No dream. Can't you understand that now? No dream. The pliers are there. I did it. May a merciful God forgive a madman. I did it. The table. My bedside table. Look there now. Look. They are there.
They're here. On your bedside table. All of them. All of Berenice's teeth.
Toothsome tale, was it not? Something to let your imagination chew on? Sorry, couldn't resist that. Seriously, though, this story, as many another, reflects that certain mystery which has puzzled mankind since the first tick of time. Which is the reality of our lives? Which the dream? You got me. I'll be back shortly.
You're driving a car you knew you were going to buy the minute you saw it. Skyhawk. Buick Skyhawk. You just knew a car this streamlined would be easy on gas, and you were right. In published EPA mileage test results, Skyhawk got 25 miles per gallon on the open road and 16 in the city. Skyhawk. It's rakish, it's low slung, it looks European, but it's a Buick.
Living free.
And now for a look at today's top stories. Cost of living still soaring with no end in sight. The price of hamburger at the supermarket.
Oh, it's so depressing. The dollar just doesn't go as far as it used to go.
Cheer up. Your dollar still goes a long way in fighting birth defects.
I turned that radio off.
But the message still comes through. Help support March of Dimes research into the cause and treatment of birth defects.
Okay, great. I'll join the March of Dimes today and find a way of life.
Give your hand to a friend. Give your heart to your love. But give your cold to contact. The sooner the better.
Sneezing, drips, congestion. What next?
6 or 3 or 1.
Is that an answer or a question?
That's the question when you catch the common cold. For you, the answer is 12-hour contact.
Why?
Well, because you need 6 cold tablets, 2 every 4 hours, or 3 cold pills, 1 every 4 hours, or just 1 contact capsule for up to 12 hours continuous relief of your sneezing, drips, and congestion. The tiny time pills do it. For aches and fever, the others contain aspirin.
And contact doesn't.
Right. So, 6 or 3 or 1. Your cold, your choice.
I'll take the 1 contact, thank you.
Give your cold to contact. The sooner the better.
6 or 3 or 1. Take contact only as directed.
So, once again, we have, you and I, as Will Shakespeare put it, let our imaginary forces work, coupling them with the febrile genius of Edgar Allan Poe, bringing to this strange tale our own vivid and viable fancy. An exercise very much worthwhile, good friends, for a lively and disciplined imagination can make our mundane lives a heaven on earth, or a hell. Our cast included Norman Rose, Michael Tolan, Joan Lovejoy, and Roberta Maxwell. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by imported Vigna Rosé wine and Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Of our mystery show, I hope nobody swoons. So long, folks, it's time to go. Thanks for staying tuned. We'll be back by and by with more of radio's best. A tale to terrify. I'll give you cardiac arrest. We guarantee our story will send chills right up your spine. Just make sure that you're the one
who chills the Vigna wine.
But for now, turn on the light and open up the lock. Hope we didn't leave you in a fright or in a state of shock. We'll be back with more suspense to make your head turn gray. Brought to you with compliments of the imported Vigna Rosé.
Imported by Hoodline, Hartford, Connecticut.
CBS News is next on KIXI AM and FM in Seattle. The time now is 11 o'clock.
CBS News. A crucial stage is said to have been reached in Secretary of State Kissinger's Middle East peace talks. I'm Mike Stanley reporting on the CBS radio network. Israeli Foreign Minister Yigal Alon said Tuesday night that a crucial stage has been reached and no unexpected problems have arisen in the conversations Kissinger has held both in Israel and Egypt. Bruno Wassertile reports from Jerusalem, to which Kissinger returned Tuesday after a one-day visit to Turkey to discuss the Cyprus problem.
The meeting between Secretary Kissinger and Israeli leaders following his return from Turkey Tuesday night was a short one, lasting little more than an hour. Perhaps fatigued by his efforts in Ankara earlier in the day, the secretary took time out for a leisurely supper with Mrs. Kissinger and a small party of friends at a popular Italian restaurant before setting off for talks with the Israeli negotiating team. Fortified by a bowl of minestrone, veal and cream sauce, and a rich Italian cake, the secretary listened to some Israeli views on the shape and scope for a second stage settlement with Egypt. Afterwards, Foreign Minister Yigal Alon told newsmen that the meeting was too brief to go into substantive matters and that another meeting would be held Wednesday morning before Kissinger shuttles off to Aswan to convey the latest Israeli thinking on an interim accord to Egypt's President Sadat. Bruno Wassertile for CBS News in Jerusalem.
The Kissinger mediation of the Cyprus issue appears to have borne fruit. The Turkish foreign minister has announced that talks between Greek and Turkish Cypriots on the future of Cyprus will resume very shortly. He indicated the Kissinger visit could lead to negotiations between Turkey and Greece on Cyprus, but also on other issues which have been a source of trouble to the North Atlantic Treaty Organization for the past year. CBS News continues following this message.
Give your hand to
or three or one? That's the question when you catch the common cold. Then take 12-hour contact. You need six cold tablets, two every 4 hours, or three cold pills, one every 4 hours, or just one contact capsule. For up to 12 hours, continuous relief from sneezing, congestion, drips. The tiny time pills do it. For aches and fever, the others contain aspirin. Contact doesn't. Your cold, your choice. Six or three or one. Give your cold to Contact, the number one cold medicine in the whole world.
Give your cold to Contact.
Six or three or one. Take Contact only as directed.
The American airlift has resumed flying supplies into the besieged Cambodian capital of Phnom Penh. Flights were suspended on Tuesday when Panchantong Airport came under heavy rocket and artillery fire from insurgents. As the heaviest shelling of the 10-week offensive was falling, President Lon Nol fired his commander-in-chief and juggled his government. Premier Long Bore resigned, but was asked to form a new cabinet. Diplomatic sources say the resignation could be the start of governmental change that could culminate in the ouster of Lon Nol himself. In Washington, the House Democratic Caucus has scheduled a Wednesday policy vote on President Ford's request for $222 million in additional aid, mostly ammunition, for Cambodia. Secretary of Defense James Schlesinger describes the military situation in Cambodia as grim, but says there still is reason for hope. He told Republican Senator John Tower of Texas that he hopes the fall of Phnom Penh is not imminent. Tower, for his part, is not so optimistic.
This is not necessarily a result of the Secretary's briefing today, but just what continuing intelligence I have on the situation indicates to me that it is probably not salvageable. I would think that the very best we could hope for would be a coalition government that included the communist insurgents.
Senator Tower. In South Vietnam, government fighter bombers blasted a big complex of buildings in the heart of the embattled Central Highlands provincial capital of Banh Mi Thuot. Attacking communist forces, which quickly controlled half the city, still are locked in a confused and bitter house-to-house fight for the other half. More in a moment.
Hearts wants to round up every brown woman in town and run them out before they run your dog down.
Roundworms can strike your dog or cat. Get rid of them safely with the Hearts once a month wormer. Add it to your pet's dinner every 30 days, then it'll round up those roundworms and keep them away for good.
Get Hearts once a month wormer at your favorite store and help your dog to be roundworm free evermore.
The Hearts once a month wormer for dogs and cats.
Hear ye, hear ye. Hear the next in the CBS Radio Network series of bicentennial specials, March 22nd and 23rd. American Wisdom with CBS News correspondent Eric Severide and Dean Rusk, S.J. Perlman, Claire Booth Luce, Studs Terkel, to name just a few of the interesting people giving you their thoughts about our country. American Wisdom with Eric Severide, March 22nd and 23rd on the CBS Radio Network.
Paris police report a six-month investigation has resulted in the recovery of 14 stolen paintings taken from two Parisian art galleries. They included works by Courbet, Van Dongen, Renoir, and Picasso. The value of the recovered items set at close to $500,000, but other paintings stolen at the same time and listed as even more valuable still are missing. Mike Stanley, CBS News.
CBS for Seattle, this is KIXI. The weather outlook calls for chance of showers tomorrow and tomorrow night with showers persisting on Thursday, highs near 50 and lows in the upper 30s. In downtown Seattle, it's 47 degrees at 6 minutes past 11.